My name is John Harnett. I'm the chairman of Untashka.
Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. Good afternoon and welcome. It's The Sod Show, 103.2 Dublin City FM. Brian Green and Peter Donegan with you for the next 28 minutes here on Dublin City FM. And coming up in today's show, Peter is talking with Untashka. Peter caught up with John Harnett, and all things Untashka will be discussed on today's programme in our main interview. During the week, Peter has been busy. He's been at the International Garden Centre Congress 2014, and we'll be hearing sound and audio from that over the coming weeks on The Sod Show as the microphone takes a trip all week long with the Irish Food Board, Bord Bia. Peter was their guest, and we shall be hearing all about the International Garden Centre Congress coming up. Well, first of all, we do have to thank our sponsors, greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. They're on the internet at greensacks.ie, and you can check them out in the supermarket where you can drop them into your trolley. If you have any news for us, you can get in touch on Twitter at Sod Show, on Facebook, we're facebook.com/thesodshow, on email, it's info@sodshow.com, and if you want to listen to the show, but not on Friday at 3 o'clock, anytime, any place, at your choosing, it's on podcast, and that's at sodshow.com. Ireland's best podcast 2012 and 2013, and nominated for best podcast 2014. See if we can do three in a row. Now to today's interview. Peter Donegan is talking with John Harnett of Untashka.
John, can you explain to me and to, I suppose, people listening outside of Ireland, number one, how do you spell Untashka? And number two, what did it do and what kind of does it now, you might say, as a body? It is a body.
It is a body. It's a registered charity. It's spelt Antaisce and it means treasure. So what do we do and what do we do now? I suppose our brief is extremely wide. We're concerned about, primarily, should we say, the climate and all the implications for that. So if you think at the top of the tree is climate change, and then out of that comes biodiversity, our plants, our mammals, the quality of our water, and then what we can do to mitigate climate change and protect the environment we're in. And that would also include, as a subdivision, the built environment, so period buildings and monuments, etc. So we'd be concerned about a whole range of things. And really, we were founded in 1948, and we have run with that, I suppose, agenda from then till now.
1948, in the jovial sense of the word, in brackets, one could have gone out and burnt plastic off a baling hay or baling twine, or we could have burnt baling twine as well on the farmland, and everybody would have just said, oh, that's the smoke from Jimmy's land. We didn't really know what climate change was in 1948, hence the question, what were you and what are you now?
Well, I suppose as regards, yes, burning things, most people, a lot of people now, are aware of the implications, but maybe sometimes we don't always think it through. So, for instance, where I am from, Westmeath, people would sometimes still use a tyre to burn the remains of a tree. But if you talk to the average person, they will know, even by the sheer vile smell when you burn plastic, that you shouldn't be doing it. And obviously it's carcinogenic and it's affecting your environment. So, but it's an education process. And part of what we do is we have a very large education program. So we're also the Green Schools, Clean Coasts, Smarter Travel. Probably every child in a national school in Ireland, and in fact some in creches, will know the Green School program and may have gone through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the levels, the green flags, which would be litter, water, energy, travel, etc. So we're pretty, you know, we're kind of all over the place, and we're trying to give people the knowledge so that they can be in control of the environment that they want. Because ultimately people will determine whether or not climate change happens. So they must have the knowledge at the same time.
You mentioned in your, I suppose, earlier notings, you mentioned buildings.
Yes, well, I suppose this is how I would have originally come to the whole environmental thing. One never comes necessarily on a straight line in life. You go left and right, and then you find yourself somewhere else. So part of our interest is, and part of my interest in, is in classical buildings, period buildings, monuments. And they don't have to be the romantic country house that you don't want ruined or that is ruined, but it can be as simple as a ring fort or a crannog, which are perhaps even more mysterious. To give an example, we have, and how you can touch history with these things. In Loch Derrivara, where I'm from, Westmeath, we have a crannog there. And in the water on the edge of the crannog, you can touch oak posts that are just below the waterline that are dated 400 BC. You can step back probably about 10 feet onto the edge of the crannog, and you can find oak planking coming out, which was built, which was put in to build up the sides of it. And that's 400 AD. So you can walk all around Ireland and you can touch history. And then it's up to you, really, if you can create a hologram in your mind to see what was happening there at that time, who the people were, what the issues were, how they smelt, what they spoke about, what the issues were, etc.
Loch Derrivara, to me, at night time, with a little bit of sunset, if that makes any sense, sits right next to Loch Ennell. I'll get to that in a minute to join the dots. But it is, without question, one of the most beautiful places on earth. I went camping there. It's fantastic. I also camped in Loch Ennell. Most people would know that. I think I've done most of the... What's the other lake that I'm thinking of?
Loch Ool.
And the Children of Lear is the connection. Give me the oddest buildings that you would have in your, do I call it an arsenal, or the oddest piece of land?
I suppose the oddest piece would be a Corinthian column in Wexford, which we'd be involved with, which is about 120 feet high, which has a stairs inside, no windows except for two or three slits, and I had to climb this in the darkness. And I must say, I didn't think I would leave alive. I thought it'd be a bag of bones at the bottom of it. That's probably the strangest one we have.
What's the standout one that you get letters from abroad saying, how do we get out there? How do we want to, we heard the stories of, we'd like to see this?
Well, I think the outstanding one would be one or two of the bogs that we have, that we'd have people from Germany, etc., who would be asking us about them, how they're going and they're being preserved. Because a lot of continental people for, I suppose, the last 50 years at least, have been interested in bogs and how we're looking after them. So that's what their concern would be.
Do you have an island in your briefcase?
We do have, I think, one or two islands off Donegal.
Can I ask you, what is the biggest issue for people environmentally out there today?
I think that really would be climate change and how we're dealing with the implications of that for Ireland. So it would be, for instance, how are we dealing with it through agriculture? How are we dealing with through transport? And what I'm talking about here is emissions, because it's CO2 and methane. So are we really looking at that realistically? Are we going to really take steps to have a plan that works? Or are we just going to sort of doodle around the edges? I think that's the biggest issue here. And really what people need to be asking people around them, what are we doing about that big issue? Because the IPCC, the scientists in the world, everyone will agree it's a big problem and it's going to change Ireland and the world as we know it in our lifetimes. So we need to be informed and make decisions.
You say informed, and I, this is not the, I don't know, the any political show. This is Garden Radio, folks, okay? Bear that in mind, so you just don't get upset about it. And these are questions that I'm asking. But, you know, people tell me and people suggest to me that we should be more conscious and becoming, I hear buzzwords like carbon neutral sitting very eloquently alongside biodiversity. And then I hear carbon offsetting and I'm kind of going, "We, in short, I gave you a bag of cash and now I'm allowed to do the equivalent of burn more stuff." That's the layman's interpretation of it, in short. But as educated as we might be, is there not a balance of that? If they keep on manufacturing, well, then is it a case of that, well, one must, you know, be a little bit stronger and boycott the product that people believe is maybe causing these emissions? And essentially what you realise is, if mom goes shopping and mom brings back the shopping, then that's just the way it goes. And if I need to be dropped to school, well, then that's just the way it goes. Does that question and my bad understanding of it make mild sense?
No, I understand the dilemma, and this dilemma we all have, because we have a lifestyle where food is delivered to us in supermarkets, entertainment is delivered, whatever it may be, cars are there to bring us hither and thither all the time. And there is an equation. You know, the world is a weighing scales, and we are pushing totally onto one side. So unless we recognize the consequences of that and change our behavior. Now, perhaps changing our behavior requires that if we have the wrong behavior, that we're penalized. And what I mean here is, for instance, Ireland led the way with the tax on plastic bags. And instantly we decided that plastic bags were a bad idea. Before that tax came in, we didn't really bother very much. Some of us were aware of it, but did we do much about it? Now everyone makes a conscious decision. So we have to make conscious decisions. We can't assume that it's someone else's problem. And this is part of the difficulty, I think, that's rising in Europe, is that people are looking at what's happening in China and India and other places and saying, well, they're kicking out so much pollution, CO2, whatever else, and methane, that really what effort can we make that would have any appreciable consequence? But you see, that's the wrong idea. Go back to the old idea that your teacher would say to you, you must lead by example. And we have to do that. And Ireland has been unique almost in the world at times, where we are able to do things and then we can go forward and say, well, look, we have done them and we want to lead on this. So why would we not do this on such an immense and important matter? Why would we not be leaders? Why would we not be able to go out and say, we have made the changes, now you must all follow because you see the consequences?
But I hear, like, parents say to me now, and bear in mind, and we've said this before, that, like, in 1980-odd when I was growing plants under my bed, and we're back to the old cliches just for a second here, folks, but I'd cycle up to the garden centre and buy a bag of compost and put it on the handlebars of my grifter and bring it home, and gardening wasn't a done thing 30 something years ago. It wasn't even in vogue. It was far from it. I mean, log roll was about as sexy as you can get, fast track. And parents are now telling me that their children that are 5 and 6 and 7 years of age are telling them that they're watering wrong, that they're sowing seeds wrong, and they're telling me that are mildly embarrassed because of this. Equally, to analogize it, or to add a couple of zeros to the end of the balance sheet and change it into something that is en masse Ireland, should you, I say you, because you're the only person here apart from me at this moment in time, but should you not be going in and, like, grabbing the head of the Irish government in the headlock and kind of going, listen, you're driving an electric car that's made from recycled paper mache, and because you're the leader, and it starts at the top and it trickles all the way down. I understand you can lose this, you could lose your job if you answer this question honestly. I get all of that, so I apologize, but in the funny way of explaining it, should it not start at the top and work all the way down, rather than, I'm kind of querying why Antashka is doing what it's doing when we have state bodies who drive state cars who are still made of steel and metal and powered by diesel.
Yeah, it is. I mean, any process of change is not going to happen in one place. First of all, if you look at the political system, it would be amazing if the people, should we say, who are in government had their moment on the road to Damascus and turned around tomorrow morning and said, yes, everything we're doing has been wrong, we need to radically change this, and we're going to do it within 2 or 5 year time plan. Believe me, we do constantly say to the government, we lobby, we write, we put in submission papers saying, you must change. So, for instance, example would be on the new climate change bill that came out, we pointed out very clearly, as, to be fair, other people did, look, there are no deadlines, there are no timelines in this, there is just aspirations. So it's not from want of trying. On the other hand, we still have to say and tell people and get them, the people on the ground, to lobby their TDs and to speak to people and say, we don't think that's right, we need changes. So it has to be a two-part process in the absence of a road to Damascus for our leaders.
There's a political bit that I don't want to kind of get into, but I did like the bit where I saw a politician some years ago drop by on a bicycle, and I thought that was lovely. I had another politician call around to my house, a former politician, I should apologise, and it was in an electric car, and I kind of thought that was good. And I did kind of query why there's not a lot more of that. And I guess we have Dublin bike scheme that has come into the country, and it's also grown. It hasn't. I think the stats on it were something like mad, like in about a 6 year period, like I think one bike was taken or not returned, like just one bike out of a couple of hundred, and they've increased that as well. So there are a lot of positives coming in. There are the elements where I do see the green flags in the schools. I do hear the parents, the children turn around to their parents and say, "Mom, will you turn the tap off? We don't need that on." And this is irrespective of water charges. This is 2, 3, 4 years ago. In the schools bit of it, who put their hand up in the air and went, "I know what we should do. We should get a whole mini populace of 700 approximate children to change everything that they've done, and in exchange we'll give them a flag." That's a genius idea, if you don't mind me saying. They should get a little medal and a little plaque for their desk that says, "I'm pretty damn cool." That is one of your gigs that you do. Did I surmise that or summarise that a fair way? Because in Ireland prior to, it was nothing new to pull up at a set of traffic lights at Newlands Cross and see somebody tip their ashtray out the window. This is going back 30 years ago, folks. The plastic bags into the hedgerows. It was pretty much all there. Everything to do with burning and rubbish and just flipping it out the window.
No, you're right. The person who originated that actually was the director of our education unit, Pat Oliver, who has spent the last 15 to 20 years essentially building this programme from a very, very small beginning to one which is now completely across the country, and has evolved into taking on other concepts, which is clean coasts, and also moving it sort of up the food chain. So there's now a green flag effectively for universities, etc., and it's been taken up by Cork, Trinity, and various other universities. But then, you know, it's a totally evolving process. So one of the things, for instance, that at Bloom this year that we're promoting from our education unit is the ability to identify with an app whether or not the cosmetics and the cleaning solutions we're using have these microbeads in them. That's microbeads mean tiny little pieces of plastic which are used as an abrasive in the solution. The problem with that is that it goes straight into the watercourse when it gets flushed down and ultimately into the sea. There are some places in the ocean where there are more pieces of plastic than there are animals or plant life actually in solution in the water. But so it's a constantly evolving thing, and it's about education, because if a child starts thinking about the environment, starts thinking about the equation, the balance, that everything you do, there's a consequence for it. And if they see that in a green context, then going forward, you know, we have a massive, huge range of people who will carry the message through and are aware. So once, you know, will not be now tipping things out on Newlands Cross for their ashtray. Not that anyone smokes anymore, of course, more or less. But
are you secretly kind of proud of what it is that you do for a living? I would gather in the job that you're in, if you don't mind me suggesting, that there are days where you maybe want to sit and bang your head off the desk and go, "Why am I doing this for you? You joke me." And then equally there's days where you have a little in your head, I call it a kind of a mini Fred Astaire, click your heels together, running down the street. Today was a good day. I made a change. It's not about, you know, "Honey, I got a pay rise." It's more, I made a bit of a difference. Do you get those days? Do you have a proudest moment?
We do get those days. I mean, I suppose I wouldn't feel that I have those days for myself. They're always days that the team have achieved, because it's never a single-handed action. And we have lots of volunteers and interns who really work hard on these things, who make things come to fruition. I mean, there's no single day that I would put up there. I think I'm very impressed, for instance, that, you know, Antashka is able to fight causes which need to be done. For instance, there's a new central access road being driven through Kilkenny. I wouldn't say we've made, you know, a big success there, but to be able to work with the people on the ground and to try and assist them in giving them their voice to change something or things that we see going wrong around us, those are the good things for me and for our team.
When you go out for a drink with the mates, if you don't mind me asking this, and what do you do? I'm making up stuff here. I'm a footballer. I'm an accountant. And you're kind of going, how do I get this title job description thing into one word. He's footballer, accountant. What's yours say?
I would normally say environmentalist, but you wouldn't actually say it. It's, I suppose it's the way you talk. I remember being at a party one time. It's funny how people form opinions of you and relating some story about someone locally, a historical figure. And people turn around and say, oh, you must be a historian. And I'm going, no, I just know an interesting story about someone there. So I don't think it's about labels. It's about really having interesting conversations with people.
Do you wish that you secretly had chosen to play for Arsenal when you were younger instead of choosing the path that you did? I'm obviously an Arsenal fan, so it's okay if you change team on that answer, but do you understand what I'm saying? Like when you grew up, I always wanted to do what I did. I knew I wasn't the greatest footballer in the world, but did you always want to be doing this?
I wouldn't say I always want to be doing this particular job, but I think I was never a great sportsman when I was younger, and I used to have all these heroes around me, both in school and college. But I suppose what I would say to people is, if you know, it's about the long game, and if you're not playing for Arsenal when you're 18, maybe you'll be playing for Arsenal in another league when you're 40 or 50 or 60.
Ah, good Lord. There's something literally in there for everybody to take from. Before I go, can I have a T-shirt?
Of course you can have a T-shirt. What size?
Slim, medium, fit. Thank you.
Thank you.
On a serious note, if people want to find out more about Antashka, there are websites, and I would gather Twitter and Facebook accounts they can go to.
Yeah, if you just Google antashka.org, that'll get you straight in. No problem.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time. A real pleasure.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Chairman of Antashka, John Harnett, speaking with The Sod Show's Peter Donegan not so long ago. We're a great, great country for heritage, and we kind of look after it until they want to build a road or a bridge and run it right through somewhere that's kind of interesting or could be interesting but needs to be checked out. And since recording that interview with John, the Kilkenny protest has really kicked off. You should look out for it, take an interest and see what's going on down in Kilkenny these very days. 103.2 Dublin City FM, it is The Sod Show, all things horticultural and gardening and landscaping. If you have any news for us, at Sod Show on Twitter. Let's go to a late in the programme song of the week, and this week it's with sadness we're going to dedicate it to the late Robin Williams, whose death we learnt of during the week. And there is no connection between the song and the dedication, but the lyrics are very poignant and they just really strike me. This is Bread and Guitar Man, Robin Williams, R.I.P.
Who draws the crowd and plays so loud? Baby, it's the guitar man.
From the 1972 album Guitar Man, the song was called The Guitar Man, written by David Gates, performed by Bread. Just before we go, some books you might want to check out, and you can buy them on all good stores. Check out this from Goodreads.com. Goodreads.com/genres/gardening. That's genres like Desres, only it's spelled G-E-N-R-E-S. Genres. Okay, little joke. Enough of the joking. The book, The Good Food Revolution by Will Allen. What can we tell you about the book? A pioneering urban farmer and MacArthur Genius Award winner points the way to building a new food system that can feed and heal broken communities. The Good Food Revolution, Growing Healthy Food, People and Communities by Will Allen. Also check out Farm City. This is The Education of an Urban Farmer, Urban and Rural Collide in this Roy-inspiring memoir, a woman who turned a vacant lot in downtown Oakland into a thriving farm. That's by Novella Carpenter, Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer. It's time to go time, with thanks to our producer Peter Donegan, on the blogs Katrina Redmond. I'm Brian Green in the studio. We're back next Friday, 3 p.m. Thanks to our sponsors, greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. Talk to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.